Hello, welcome to Workplace Wake Up. I'm Jen Shaw. Every week, I spend about 15 minutes covering key legal developments, introducing you to interesting guests, and providing some entertainment to start your workday. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. Well, I guess you might be listening at night or on a weekend, but I get comments from a lot of you saying, I listen to this immediately on Wednesday morning, which is so fun. So if you're one of those regular people who listen to us on Wednesday mornings, welcome. The rest of you, so happy you're here. We're going to talk about leaves of absence today. And I know you might be thinking, wow, she kind of talks about this a lot. Yes, I do. Because you know why? It is the number one thing that employers get sued for across the country. I don't care about California, across the country. It is also the number one highest jury verdict that plaintiff's lawyers get for their clients when there's a leave of absence or reasonable accommodation issue. And I've thought a lot about that. I think part of it is that we put ourselves in the shoes of the person who's suing. And many of us have had employment issues because of a leave of absence that we needed or a reasonable accommodation we requested for a disability or medical condition. And so I think jurors identify with these individuals. And so they want to throw the book at the employer when they feel like the employer hasn't done what they should have done. Now, we do, as many of you know, a couple of multi-day workshops every year dealing with leaves of absence and reasonable accommodations. And the number one thing we get asked is, okay, isn't there a rule book? Isn't there some sort of sliding scale chart that I could look at that would tell me, okay, this employee's been out this amount of time, they have this job, they got this note from their doctor, I only have to approve another 4 weeks and then I'm going to let them go. No, there is no such thing. The bottom line is, when you're dealing with leaves of absence and reasonable accommodations, if the employer is the one that quits, and what I mean by that is says, this is the leave you get, nothing more, nothing less, take it or leave it, or this is the accommodation I'm going to give you, it's the only one that'll work, take it or leave it, you will lose. You will lose a lawsuit. You will have a jury come back with a lot of money that you have to pay, because it is a case-by-case assessment every single time. And I know it's frustrating. We work with some brilliant clients who say to me, look, Jen, this just doesn't make sense. Like, are you literally telling me that every time one of my 5,000 employees asks for a reasonable accommodation, that I have to look at that case by case? I have to look at the doctor's note. I have to examine their job duties and their job description. I have to see what they've done in the past. That takes a lot of time and energy. I know. Which is why I've been saying for decades, you must, no matter how small you are, you must have someone in your organization who at least knows a little bit about leaves of absence and accommodations and can help navigate these issues when they happen. They happen all the time, and they are frustrating because we have work that needs to be done, and someone who needs a leave of absence or wants leave as an accommodation, for example, they're not going to be at work, so they're not getting the work done. So now we have to figure out, how are we going to get the work done? And then some other accommodations are things that we think we can't possibly accommodate, like I need to take a 15-minute break every hour I'm at work. Okay, so you're going to be working 45 minutes out of every hour? Okay. And then, I also can't use my hands or sit or stand or twist or bend. And we're like, can you do the job? Like, well, what is the job? It depends, right? So one of the rules that I think is really helpful to understand, and it will free you from thinking you are missing something out there, is that there is no guidebook. There is no Well, maybe there's a guidebook. There's no definitive rule book, let me put it that way, where I can tell you somebody asked for 2 months of leave, we approved it, now they want 3 more, that's too much. Or 1, 1, and 3, 1 month, 1 month, and 3 months, that third month, that's going to be it. And if they need more time, we're done. It just doesn't work that way. This is why we recommend having committees, right? Where you have somebody from employee relations or HR, someone from labor relations, if you're a union environment, maybe someone from the general counsel's office or legal, if you have in-house counsel, maybe out-house counsel. I do these with a lot of our clients where we have weekly meetings and we talk about the accommodation and leave requests that have come up and what needs to be done. Sometimes it's a 3-minute conversation because we're just confirming what's going on. Other times we have to really wrestle with a tough situation. So I don't want you to think you're out there flapping in the wind and you've missed some trick that everybody else knows. You haven't. When it comes to reasonable accommodations and leaves of absence, you must deal with them on a case-by-case basis. Why? Because your employees and applicants are individuals. They have different medical issues or religious beliefs for accommodation. They need a leave maybe to care for a family member. It's going to be a different amount of leave depending on what the situation is. They have an accommodation, let's say that their sight is impaired, and one person has asked for a special monitor. Another person needs to have the lights dimmed in their office. Every one of these situations is going to be different. Now, remember, one of the things that helps with stress and anxiety in the world is how you think about a situation. Somebody said this to me once, and I think it's brilliant. You can't necessarily change a situation, but you can change how you think about it. So let me give you an example. So I was divorced. I've been divorced, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. And when my ex-husband first said, okay, this isn't working out, I need to leave, I was very upset. We'd been married 20 years. I was dating him in high school. It was very upsetting. And I started thinking, something's wrong with me. I'm such a loser. How could this guy leave me after all this time? And we have a 6-year-old daughter, and this is crazy. Like, what's wrong with me? What could I have done better? And as soon as somebody said to me, what if you chose to think instead? Wow, what an idiot. Look what he's losing. Situation didn't change. I'm still getting divorced. But you know what? All of a sudden I was like, okay, I'm not such a loser after all, right? The way you think about a situation really makes a difference. So if you go into this leave of absence and reasonable accommodation management thinking, oh no, it's so hard and it's so complicated and there's all these details and I don't have time and I'm so busy. If you take the Eeyore approach, right, you will be miserable. The facts are not going to change. It is going to be a lot of work. It is going to take time. It is going to be frustrating sometimes. But if your attitude instead is, hey, this employee needs something from me. I'm going to see what I can do. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to treat this employee or this applicant like they are my absolute favorite person in the world. Now, they may be or they may not be, but that's beside the point, right? You're going to treat them as if they are. When you take that approach, instead of thinking, how much longer do I have to let Matilda be on leave before I can let her go? You can say, okay, well, what else does Matilda need? And if you can't give her any more, you can't. You're done. But you haven't put yourself through this whole bit about how hard it is. I know it's hard, but guess what? As I tell my daughter all the time, we can do hard things. We do them all the time. So the way we think about leaves of absence and reasonable accommodations, I think, makes our job harder if we're thinking about it as drudgery, as frustrating, as unnecessary, as unfair. If we use all these negative terms to think about it, it doesn't change the fact that the applicant or employee needs something. It's just going to make it more painful for us to go through. And as HR professionals, right, people read what we do. People will follow our emotions. So I find when I get stressed out at work, I stress out other people. And I don't mean to, but that's just what's going to happen. So the more we can say, okay, let's really take a step back. Let's analyze these situations in a way that is more productive. Let's have a protocol in place. Let's have steps that we follow every time so that everybody knows where we are in the process. Let's make sure we document those steps appropriately so we can show to a court if we need to a lawyer if we need to, that, hey, we've done things correctly. We've done what we need to do. When you take that approach and you look at this person as being your favorite employee, you will have far fewer legal claims. You will have much less frustration in administering the process. And you're going to save some employees who are good employees who just needed a little bit of help, needed an accommodation, needed a leave. It's a little blip in the relationship with you. If you let that blip color their entire tenure or make you feel like you don't want them around anymore, you may be losing a really good employee. And it just doesn't make sense. So one of the things that I want you to do in thinking about leaves of absence and accommodations, and I don't care how many employees you have and how many sites you have and how many locations you have, I want you to sit down very simplistically and think about, how can we manage these processes? How are we currently looking at leaves of absences and accommodations? How are we evaluating them? What documentation do we require? How do we look at that documentation? Where do we store it? All of those kinds of logistical issues. I want you to think about that so that you can figure out, are you doing it in the most efficient way? Is there something you could be doing differently that might help to get this going in the right direction, to make it easier and less stressful and less frenetic, frankly, right? So that you're not running around like a chicken with your head cut off. Now, this is going to require collaboration. So you're going to have people in your organization who are willing to talk to you, frontline supervisors. What does this person do? I know what the job description says, but what do they actually do? What do you require them to do? Should we be updating the job description, right? So much of what comes up when we talk about leaves of absence and reasonable accommodation are related topics like job descriptions, like performance evaluations, like coaching and mentoring that are not directly related, but definitely come into play, right? If your job description isn't accurate, then when somebody asks for an accommodation, you can't assess if they can perform the essential functions of the job with or without that accommodation, because you don't even know what the actual duties are. What are their essential functions? And you all know, I'm sure, that if you're going to consider something to be an essential function, like travel, for example, you got to put it in the job description or the duty statement. I had a client one time who was recruiting for a position that required 40% travel. He hired someone and then the person said she couldn't travel because she had an ill mother. And so he called me and said, well, Jen, it's an essential function of this job that they travel. I said, yeah, I know, I get it, Ernie, but I'm looking at the job description. I hear you, it doesn't say anything about travel. And he says to me, yeah, you know, I didn't want to scare anybody off when they applied for the job, so I just didn't put that in there. That's a problem. Okay, because you have a job description for a job that you expect someone to travel 40% of the time outside of the office away from their home, and you don't have that in the duty statement, you don't have that in the job description, forget it. You're never going to be able to argue that that's an essential function. So updating those job descriptions, making sure that everybody understands currently what are your expectations, what do you expect them to be able to do, that is critical to properly assessing these issues. Leave of absence. Do you know when you hit 50 employees? Because if you've got 50 employees within a 75-mile radius, you're going to be complying with the Family and Medical Leave Act, the federal law, right? In other states like California, you need 5 employees and you've got to comply with the California Family Rights Act. Many other states have these state law equivalents. So you've got to find a way to track what is going on and make sure that you're keeping up to date with developments, both legal developments and organizational developments in terms of what you need to get the job done. Nothing in these laws about leaves of absence and reasonable accommodations require employers to lower their performance standards or lower their productivity standards or accept less than acceptable work. We don't have to do that to comply with these laws. But you do have to be fair. You do have to be consistent. You do have to make sure that you are complying with all of the legal requirements and with your policies. I have a client. It's a great client. They're a credit union. They're amazing. And they love their employees and they give them all kinds of extra stuff. Like they let California paid sick leave roll over every year, even though they have a front load program and they don't need to do that. Well, that has implications. Those kinds of policies have implications. Now they're coming back to me saying, well, we don't like the implications. I get it. But when you give these benefits, you have to know that there's cause and effect, right? More people are going to want to take the leave. You're giving more leave. So we have to think about what our policies say in addition to what the law says. The bottom line is this, you guys, you can do hard things. I know this is a tricky aspect of your job as HR professionals, but you can do it. More importantly, you can coach your frontline managers and supervisors, your leaders, the rest of your HR team to do it as well. It's not impossible, but it takes affirmative action, affirmative steps to make sure that you are in compliance and you are doing what should be done. So go out there, take a look at your leave of absence policies, take a look at your reasonable accommodation policies with a critical eye and think about what you could be doing better. Thank you, everyone. Keep up the good work. I'll see you next time. Workplace Wake Up, including our guests and hosts, do not provide legal advice in this podcast. Do not act upon any of the information discussed in this podcast without first consulting a licensed attorney in your jurisdiction. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to spread the word, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and/or rate and review it. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, and email us at info@shawlawgroup.com.